Y'all didn't know Rhonda could play the flute, did? Now, did you? That's a great machine there. That's an orchestra. Just plug it in the wall and go for it. So today we're going to be in Nehemiah 6. We're going to be looking at Nehemiah 6. We've been working our way through the book of Nehemiah. And so far in our journey with Nehemiah, we've witnessed Nehemiah's vision in action. We've experienced the birth of his vision through his brokenness, through persistent prayer that stood firmly on the promises of God and those promises to restore his people. We've seen Nehemiah as he's identified the problem, as he's developed a solution for it, which that is where the vision was actually born. We've seen God's favor, and we've seen God's favor as just prayer after prayer. Nehemiah was a man of prayer. And we're going to see several prayers today where it just seems like Nehemiah is going. And as issues arise, he just prays right then and there. And it's just been beautiful to see God's favor. We've seen Nehemiah these last couple of weeks lead the Jews through some really difficult times. And 2 weeks ago, we looked at just overcoming the discouragement that was coming from the outside, as there was ridicule, there was threats of war, of an attack. We've seen internal issues and strife from last week, where they weren't following God's law and they were putting their own people pretty much into slavery and excessive interest and just a lot of difficulty that they caused themselves. And so Nehemiah, he's been earning his wages as he's been leading the people through some really difficult times. And then today we're going to look and see, how does Nehemiah respond in the face of personal persecution? And now, before we look at Nehemiah 6, what exactly are we talking about when we say persecution? We think of persecution, we think about people overseas. And some of the difficulties that our brothers and sisters in other churches are having, and they are experiencing extreme persecution. But what we're talking about today is even some persecution that we may experience in our own personal lives. But looking at it from the point of view where persecution is hostility, and it's ill treatment. That ill treatment could come from your political views, can come from your religious views. It can sometimes come through things such as race or gender, but what we're focusing on today is that those things that deal with our religious beliefs. And some synonyms that go along with that are oppression, victimization, mistreatment, abuse, discrimination, harassment, hounding, intimidation, and bullying. And as you can see, all these words that we use to describe persecution are for the purposes of bringing in fear. And that's what we're going to be seeing, how Nehemiah deals with this. But let's read today, begin reading the first four verses in chapter 6. Now, when it was reported to Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, the Arab, and to the rest of our enemies that I had rebuilt the wall and that no breach remained in it, although at the time I had not set up the doors in the gates, then Sanballat and Geshem sent a message to me, saying, "Come, let us meet together at Kepharim in the plain of Ono." But they were planning to harm me. So I sent messengers to them, saying, "I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you?" They sent messages to me four times in this manner, and I answered them in the same way. So here we have Nehemiah showing that there's an issue going on here and using discernment. So on your listening outline today, if you're filling that out, our first is, we must seek discernment, is what we see here. Now, discernment is the ability to see and understand things, people, or situations clearly and intelligently. Now, Nehemiah here, they're dealing with these men, and it's easy at first glance to see okay, maybe they're starting to respect him now. And here they just want to have a meeting. They want to come and see how they can cooperate and just, hey, how can we compromise? How can we team up now that you're establishing yourself as a people, as a culture? You know, what can we do to work together? But Nehemiah, through his discernment, he knew their character. He knew their actions. And he knew that what they were trying to do is derail his work. And if we've seen that, that's been their example the whole time. And so he's like, something is up here. Now, don't misunderstand here. I'm not saying that compromise is not a good thing. I'm not saying that cooperation is not a good thing. We see that happy compromise can invigorate marriages and ministries, and we got to come together. But we need to come together, and compromise is only important when we are trying to fulfill the same purpose. And when we have the same purpose and the same goal, the same vision in mind, then compromise is often a good thing. However, here we see this is an enemy that is calling for compromise, and when the enemy comes, we must use discernment. And here we got to be careful, because when you invite the devil to join your team, they expect him to change the rules, expect him to change the goals, and expect to be defeated. So Nehemiah here, he had three convictions, and there's convictions going on here. First, we got to remember that the actions that these men have already shown. He knew these men were lying and they wanted to kill him. We just read that in verse 2. And Nehemiah, he had a spiritual discernment that came from walking with God that allowed him to detect the enemy's strategy here and then defeat it, to walk away from it, just not even give it any thought. But second, we saw in verse 3 where it says, you know, he was convinced here, he said, of the greatness of work, of the work that God had given him. He's got a vision. He's got to fulfill it. He's got to be about his work. And if Nehemiah allowed himself to be distracted or detoured from the assignment that God had given him, who would lead the people? We have to remember the kind of state that they were in. They were building this wall. Then these same men that we were talking about, that now they appear like they want to be friendly. These were the men that forced him to change his plan. They were building in one hand. They had the sword in the other. They have half the people standing guard and standing watch while the other ones work. And so knowing this and knowing to go face them, and if something was to happen to him and if he's off the project, that a leaderless project is pretty much, it's aimless. And without his vision, without him driving that vision, eventually everything would fall apart. And here he must be a good example. And Nehemiah, we see here that he's been a good example the entire time. And then third, probably the most important here, is that really the Jews had nothing in common with Sanballat or Tobiah or Geshem. They had nothing in common. There's no basis for cooperation. You know, they had made it very clear from the outset of the project, if you remember from Nehemiah, the last verse in chapter 2 is 2:20, where he said, where Nehemiah was told these three men, he said, "But as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it." And so here, they had no basis for cooperation. This past week, Joe and I met with Mark Johnston from the Florida Baptist, and he came down and he works all the way from Key West to Perdita Key, and covering Florida and just the community ministries, especially those around feeding ministries, which would be our food bank. He orchestrates a lot of dental mobile units and other ministries, church planning. I think he had some parts to do in that. And one of the things that we kept talking about, or that we were listening for, and what got us plugged in with these guys is they've offered us money like three times from, hey, we want to be a part, we want to do this. But there has to be discernment in this. You know, through the federal government, we could just get grants. We could do so much through the food bank with federal money. But guess what? We have a different purpose. We have a different vision. And you start bringing in people with a different vision and you start cooperating with things, they bring in different expectations. They bring in different rules. Their goals are not the same as our goals. We can't compromise. We can't form a cooperation in those things. Because to us, it's not just about filling people's stomachs. It's about filling their hearts as well. You know, in the same way that we see here, we gotta judge. You know, we gotta discern. You know, ways that we gotta, you know, make discernment. First of all, where does discernment come from? Discernment begins and only begins with God. Now, discernment is kind of an action of that is founded in wisdom. In James 1:5, it is clear that wisdom comes through prayer and through Christ alone. This discernment in the Christian life only comes through God. And from when we spend time with God, we begin to know the things of God, and we can begin to discern the things that are not of God. Now, an example of that, if you've ever worked in a bank, or if you know anybody that has worked in a bank, you know, before they become a teller or they work in the bank, they have to learn what is a confederate. Counterfeit. Yeah, not a confederate money, but counterfeit money. And, you know, the best way to do that is to study the actual counterfeit. But the thing is that counterfeits are always changing. And so the strategy that they use in the bank is that they study the real thing. You know, what does the authentic look like? And when you become so familiar with with an authentic bill, whether it be whatever denomination that it might be, a 1 to a 50 or whatever, but when you become, you've studied the authentic bills, the bank cashiers, they're no longer fooled by what is fake, because they're so in tune with what is real that when the fake comes along, it stands out. You know, that is true when it comes to us and discernment according to Scripture, according to God. That's the same thing that we must do to develop spiritual discernment, is that we must know the authentic God and the things in His Word in such a way that when something that is inauthentic comes in our path, that we realize it. That something inside of our heart says, wait, this is wrong. Something's wrong here. That is called discernment. It's called abiding. When we abide with God in such a way that we're able to realize what is of Him and what is not of Him. Let's read next Nehemiah. We're going to 6 verses 5 through 9. Then Sanballat sent his servant to me, and in the same manner a fifth time, with an open letter in his hand. In it was written, "It is reported among the nations, and Gashmu says, that you and the Jews are planning to rebel. Therefore, you are rebuilding the wall, and you are to be their king according to these reports. You have also appointed prophets to proclaim in Jerusalem concerning you, a king is in Judah. And now it will be reported to the king according to these reports. So come now, let us take counsel together. Then I sent a message to him saying, such things as you are saying have not been done, but you are inventing them in your own mind. For all of them were trying to frighten us." And there we see that. That's a point of persecution. "Thinking that they will become discouraged with the work and it will not be done. But now, O God, strengthen my hands." So here we see, first we had to focus on discernment. Now we must take care of our character. That's number two on your listening outline. We must take care of our character. Now here we see that, obvious, we know the story. We've been following along. This note that they just sent to Nehemiah is obviously a lie. This has been slanderous that he's sending it to him. But there's even something more here. Did y'all notice that it was not sealed? Now, in letter sending at this time, it would mostly be on a piece of leather or some sort of parchment, and they would seal the letter. There would be some kind of string that would seal it and shut it, and then they would have either wax or maybe some clay, and it would dry on there, and if it had been open, you could tell. But here the letter wasn't sealed. Wasn't sealed at all. And it was for the very purpose and the intentions of starting rumors and gossip. You know, statements like, it's been reported, and they say, or have you heard? You know, these cause trouble. They cause trouble in the workplace. They cause trouble in families. They're causing troubles here for Nehemiah. And they cause troubles in the local churches. And it's sad to say, but in most organizations, again, whatever they may be, there are usually some gossip mongers hovering like vultures, just waiting for tidbits of slander that they can swoop down, eat up, and if you know anything about vultures, they regurgitate. As you can tell, I don't think very highly of gossip. Gossip hurts. Gossip kills. Gossip brings division. And gossip is sin. And it was said, and nobody's claimed this, so it's by an anonymous wit, is what it was said, has defined gossip as news you have to hurry and tell somebody else before you find out it isn't true. Gossip divides. But you know what? It's going to happen. Because it's always happened. So as Christians, and as Christian leaders, and I would suggest that you are all a leader in some way or in some form in your life. By the Great Commission alone, we are called to go, therefore, and make disciples. So we're called to lead in Christ in some way. But we have to know how to handle these false accusations. We have to know how to handle these vicious letters, these unfounded reports and gossip. And because these things hurt. And they can hurt. And when we spend too much time trying to defend ourselves, it takes us off of our vision. It takes us away from our calling. But so how do we see that Nehemiah did it? And Nehemiah, he faced it. But look how exactly he simply denied the reports. It's like all this thing you've made up in your mind. We see that he prayed to God for strength. He said, God, strengthen my hands. And that's so important. We're just to pray to God and he'll take care of it. And then what did Nehemiah do? He went back to work. He went back to work. And now why could Nehemiah just go back to work? Because of his character. It was because of his character. And I tell you, when we have a character that walks with Christ and represents Christ in such a way that when an honest person really hears you and sees how you refute this, they can't deny it by your character. Now I tell you, if we take care of our character, we can trust God to take care of our reputation. And Nehemiah was that person. Now we have to be careful not to believe everything that we read or we hear about our Christian brothers or sisters, whether they be here, whether they be at another church. Consider the source. Always consider the source. Now I challenge you to rebuke the source if you know what it is and know what is true. But I challenge you to firmly refuse to accept anything that is given to you as truth that is not backed up with documentation. Because to do so brings division in your life and in the life of whatever organization you may be, but especially in the life of this church. So many things. So many things. We have, you know, there's a website out there called the International Heresy Hunters. And they sound good. And they're just tearing apart good Christian leaders left and right. But with these leaders, they don't even acknowledge them. I mean, people like Billy Graham, people who are changing the world, they just destroy them. And like all this hate, if it's coming from a hateful way, can it truly be of Christ? I think not. But again, if we take care of our character, we can trust God to take care of our reputation. Next, let's look at verses 10 through 14. It says, when I entered the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, son of Mehetabel, who was confined at home, he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple. For they are coming to kill you, and they are coming to kill you at night. But I said, should a man like me flee? And should one such as I go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. Then I perceived that surely God had not sent him, but he uttered his prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He was hired for this reason, that I might become frightened, we see that word again, and act accordingly and sin, so they may have an evil report in order that they could reproach me. Remember, and here he's praying again, I love it. Remember, O my God, Tobiah and Sanballat, according to these works of theirs, and also Noadiah, the prophetess, and the rest of the prophets who were trying to frighten me. Wow. Here we see with Nehemiah, we must seek to maintain our witness. Here now, verse 11, where it says, should a man like me flee? At first you can read that, well, that could sound prideful. But it's not intended to be such. Here he's a man that's been called by God, been challenged by God, and said, hey, this is the vision that I have for you. And God has just repeatedly provided for him and shown his favor. And now, and a man like me is not a man that is prideful, not that he's bigger and he's too big to die by the hands of these men. But what he's saying is, I've been called, I've been protected by God. Should I be distracted from what I've been called to do, to run and hide? No, not a man such as this. And this is even more important. He rejected Shemaiah's his proposal because it was contrary to the law of Moses. Now, if you remember, it was forbidden for a layman to go beyond the burnt the offering place in the temple. And it says here in Numbers 18:7, it said, the outsider who comes near shall be put to death. It was not a place for Nehemiah to go in. So immediately, when Shemaiah was giving him false information that was contradictory to the word of God, he knew that he was a false prophet. Again, we see Nehemiah's his discernment here. He knew God's word. He prayed all the time. And we see him again praying in verse 14. And the thing is, again, what we just said is that Nehemiah was a man who abided with God. He knew the word. He knew the truth. He knew his Lord. He knew that what God had called him to do. And he walked so close with God that whenever something came that wasn't right, he knew where he stood with his Lord. And he was able to maintain his witness. Say, if he would have run into and hidden in the temple like a coward and not trusting God's protection, it would have ruined his reputation. It would have ruined it forever. He would have become a reproach. And this vision that he had motivated the Jewish people with, it would have been over. It would have been ruined. Who is this Nehemiah? Take care of your character. God will take care of your reputation. Let's look at verses 15 through 19. Here it says, so the wall was completed on the 25th of the month of Elul in 52 days. That's pretty amazing. 52 days. Listen to this. When all our enemies heard of it and all the nations surrounded us saw it, they lost their confidence, for they recognized that this work had been accomplished with the help of God. Also, in those days, and you'd think it'd be done there, but listen to this. Also, in those days, many letters went from the nobles of Judah to Tobiah, and Tobiah's letters came to them, for many in Judah were bound by oath to him because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Arah, and his son Jehohanan had married the daughter of Meshullam, the son of Berechiah. Moreover, they were speaking about his good deeds in my presence and reported my words to him. There was gossip still going on. Then Tobiah sent letters to, we see it again, to frighten me. So here we see with Nehemiah, number four on the listening outline, we must practice determination. Determination. Nehemiah, I mean, we've seen all that he's gone through, and there's many of us here probably in this own room, and I would consider it. I'm like, Lord, is this even worth it? Lord, what are you doing here? Look at all this. But not Nehemiah. He was determined. He both had what we've already seen, discernment, and he had determination. He refused to be influenced by their offers back in 1:4. And, you know, think back to that. If the offer was wrong the first time, you'd imagine it'd be wrong the second, the third, the fourth time that it came. And, you know, but there's no reason for him to reconsider. He trusted his Lord, and the decisions that he had made were not based on his opinions, but they were based on his convictions. And when we are convicted in such a way to pursue a vision, regardless of what it is, whether it's to be a missionary or be a stay-at-home mom to disciple your kids, regardless of what your vision and your calling is, we must fulfill it regardless of what comes against us. Nehemiah. What's so fun here is it was 52 days. 52 days. It was because of his convictions. Not because, now let me be careful, let me back up there. Because of his convictions, he trusted God. And this could not have happened. This was an impossible task. 52 days, they restored the walls to the city. And that's why all their enemies were so concerned. Because they knew that their God was helping them. And I tell you, when we stick to our witness, when we seek the Lord in everything, regardless of what we face, whatever you're facing in your neighborhood, in your family, in your workplace, in us as we try to serve, regardless of what we face, if we stick to the convictions and the calling that God has given us, it will prevail. God is trustworthy. 52 days, definitely apparent that they were with him. But we see here, but they did not give up. You see, Tobiah is still up to his same old tricks, sin and ladders. You know, we would sit here and think, hey, you know, my thought, hey, we built the wall in 52 days. Let's have a party. Let's have a cake. And, you know, and that's what we do. But we've got to realize here, and what Nehemiah knew here, is that our enemy is not a quitter. Our enemy, he stays on the field even when it looks like he has lost the battle. You know, many Christians it seems that we've won the war, but because we've celebrated too soon and not kept watch, we have ultimately lost the victory. I tell you, Satan is always looking for an opportune time. He never gives up, just like these men are an example. The enemy never gives up. He's looking for a time to where the victors can once again become the victims. We see that pattern again and again. I tell you, we need to heed. One of the Scottish minister, Andrew Bonar, he said, let us be watchful after the victory as before the battle. We can't see Satan working. And if we can't see him, it's probably because he's gone underground in some way. And I share this with you. It's because, you know, we're going through a really good time. Really good time. If you haven't seen, you know, the church is growing by looking in here today. It doesn't appear that we need to. I tell you, we're going. I'm getting on some folks. God's doing good things. This is a joyful time to be a part here. But I tell you, we haven't been called to comfort, but we've been called to war. And if we can't see him working, we know that somewhere he is working. Actually, I think it might be safer that if we're in the midst of the battle, so we know where He's working and we know where to direct our prayers and we know where the front is, it keeps us alert. It keeps us trusting God. It gets us to that spot where Nehemiah told his people back a couple chapters ago to watch and pray. And I tell you, church, we must always watch and pray. We're a people in pursuit of a vision. We're in the people of the pursuit of fulfilling a vision, I mean. But here we see the story. Nehemiah, his determination that kept him through. We began with a story or in the beginning of the chapter, when I'm back to chapter 1, it began where we see where he prayed. God answered and he went to Jerusalem. And then God strengthened their hand for a good work. And you see all that they worked through, and they built the wall, they labored. And now it seems like we reach the end of this story. The wall is finished, but what it marks is not the end of a story, but it marks a new beginning. And we see that Nehemiah, we're only halfway through. But what we need to look at here from the truths in verse 6, and it brings us to number 5 on your outline, is we must avoid sinful fear. Avoid sinful fear. Throughout this passage, we saw we saw the word frighten. The purpose of this persecution was to frighten them. The purpose, and through that fear, we respond in a certain way. Again, the purpose of persecution is to make us stop whatever we are pursuing. And here, we see Nehemiah. He didn't stop. He didn't leave his vision. He didn't leave his service. He didn't leave his ministry. Why? Because he had courage. He had courage. And just like him, we need courage. Now, we have to realize that courage does not exist without fear. It's part of the recipe. You can't have courage if there is not fear. You must be afraid first and then decide to courageously respond to it, or we cowardly respond to it. And I tell you, the vision that God has given you, whatever it may it be in your life, may it be as a corporately, whether it's at your workplace or whatever it might be, it will always probably have some element of fear. Why? Because if it's from God, it's bigger than you. If you can do it, then you don't need God. So I guarantee whatever God brings, you can do it. Like, Lonnie, even being a stay-at-home mom, if you just mentioned that, being a calling. Well, have you ever had to go from two incomes to one? That's scary. But God can do it. So we must avoid the sinful fear. Now, how do we do that? Trust, pray. Again, going and abiding with Him. Again, Nehemiah trusted God in such a way. You know, we all become afraid for various reasons, whatever it might be, at some time in our life. But we gotta, it depends on how we react. Are we gonna react in trust and face it, whatever words? I mean, Nehemiah, what was he facing here? He was facing potential death. But because he trusted his God, he prayed, he knew the word, he abided with his Lord, and his Lord, he took care of him. In the same way, God will take care of you. But there are some ways that if we react, it becomes sin. And let's look at 3 of those here that we see that's reflected in Nehemiah 6. First, fear becomes a sin when we allow it to deflect us from God's calling. When God has given us a purpose, when He has given us a specific task, and we allow persecution, we allow fear to come in our life in such a way to where you say, Lord, I can't handle it. I'm not going to be obedient. I'm not going to follow through on this. When we are deflected from our task, and we know that God has called us to do it, but the fear runs us off, that is sin. Next, as Nehemiah just faced, when we are afraid of charges based on falsehood. You know, that's hard. And not only is it hard, but it hurts. You know, many of us won't be threatened with our life. You know, and the thing that Nehemiah was being threatened, the falsehood that was being spread, the rumor wouldn't just ruin his reputation. If that word got back to the king, well, the king is going to send the army out after this cupbearer's head. And so this was huge. It was not just a fear of my reputation. It was a fear for his life. But when we are afraid and we change our direction because of potential falsehoods, again, that becomes sin when we run away. And then third, when we would even use a real religious refuge to spare our lives and to spare ourselves from fulfilling the cost of what God has called us to do for his purpose, then it would become sin. He's called us to do a work, and if he's called you to do a work, and if we're abiding in him through staying in the word and through prayer, if we're abiding in him, I promise he will fulfill and give you character, or not, give you whatever it is needed to finish your task. I tell you, it can be asserted that whatever your work is, whether it's building a wall, building a congregation, or even evangelizing the heathen in some sort of third world country, it is clear that we must give the occupation of serving God the biggest priority in our life. It's about God. And we've just looked at that over and over and over again on Wednesday night, Sunday morning, this word that keeps popping up. Does anybody know what that word is? All. Well, prayer. Yeah, we've been talking about. But the word all. All. Not just part of us. Not just some of us. Not just sometimes. But all. He wants all of our heart. He wants us all of the time. In every situation, regardless of what that situation might be. It's all. You know, and we talked about here, about our vision, our personal vision. We have a corporate vision, we have personal visions, we have personal callings. You know, and I look around here and I see mostly family. But you know, our first calling, the first vision that God has for every one of us is to know Christ. And without Christ, and I don't know where you stand today, I don't know where you are today. But how are you walking with Christ? All this that we are talking about outside of Christ makes no sense and doesn't matter. Where are you with Christ today? He loves you. He died for you. He hung on the cross for you. He rose again for you. And he's promised that he's coming again for you. Where are you walking with Christ? That's your number one calling, is to a relationship with him.